wiped out those that I know from the matter. She's taking exam at a fast rate, depending how she has managed to study, she will be here by now. But it is difficult, maybe she's just sitting in the exam room. I assume the other members are coming back. They are still maybe having the difficulty to find their way to the meeting. But welcome, Madam Nan. Our apology was a little late because of the extended time by Parliament City. It was supposed to finish before 4, but you were there. At least we're explaining something which you have witnessed that is what we could do from our side. I hope we will be able to give you the other logistical challenges which might cause by the delay and so on. So that one we'll manage from our side. But thanks very much that you have accepted you are here before the committee for the interview. Members, when they introduce them, when they ask questions, they will introduce themselves to you so that you know them. Myself, I'm Kumbuzo Eric Colon, chairing the committee. But members, as they ask questions, you refer short, all of them are going to ask the questions. So you know them when you finish after they ask the questions. I've seen members have already started to raise their hands, and I can see you have water in front of you. So do put off the fire, it's too hot. That will be a coolant if you're a car, but the remaining that's what you can drink it is hot. Members, our candidate, Madam Dana Sidia, ready for your engagement. I've seen Honorable Mrutua, the hand was up, followed by the door machine. Niman, Hohen, and Tick. Honorable Mruto?
Good afternoon. I would like to interview you according to what I read in your SCV. My name is Story Mruto. I am concerned about the strength that I have in and regulating. I wanted you to explain to me in terms of your strength that you have. What value you add to the MPA if you were to be appointed as a board member, and furthermore, what is your understanding of the Media Development Diversity Act, and what are the weaknesses that you have picked up, if there are any, and what value would you add then maybe to rectify what we call witnesses maybe in the MPA Act. And I also would like to know your understanding about the policies that we have in place, the policies such as the PFMD, also the Kingpin, all the Kingpin, a code of governance. I also would like you to explain to us in terms of constitution of South Africa, what do you understand the MPA should really, what role is it supposed to play in terms of our constitution. So far, Chairperson, I think I will no, just one other thing I would like not all of you to explain to me. Right now, the MPA is situated in the president. And I don't know, according to what you have viewed, whether it is correctly situated where it is, because there are issues that the MDDA is doing, and we think that also the DOC is currently having similar responsibilities as the MDDA. And the other factor is that it is not quite clear to other people what the role of the MDDA is, because you find that they are overlapped with the MDDA and the DCIS. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You may respond to the question.
Thank you. Maybe I'll start by explaining my understanding of the role of the MDDA as it relates to the DOC, the GCIS, and any other entities that have a role to play in as far as IT is concerned in South Africa. I understand the MDDA as being the government agent which might be sitting or reporting to the president via the GCIS. I don't personally believe it duplicates what the DCIS is doing. I'm of the view that as an agency, I guess it's because I also work for a government agency, but it's in case that reports to the Department of Economic Affairs. There are issues that government, when they try to do service delivery, they are hindered to do, which an agency as an implementing arm of government tends to be better suited to handle. I believe the GCIS, in my understanding of the government machinery, maintains the high-level policy and strategic direction guided by what the president as an executive is saying. Then the MDDA would come up with programs that are tangible and measurable that can be implemented to ensure that the policies that GCIS as a government has passed, or any directive for that matter. My understanding as well is that because the ICT environment is a bit complex with three posters, broadcasting and telecommunications, what some people might see as duplication, if you try to distinguish the difference between the MDA and USASA as an example, which is yet another agency within the ICT environment, could be that. In my view, I see the MDDA currently focusing on print and broadcasting, while USASA as a critical statute speaks more to what the Telecommunications Act provided, which means they tend to cater for interventions that speak to telecommunications and exclude print and also exclude broadcasting, in spite of the fact that there's convergence. Whether the MDDA is better suited the reporting to the president via the GCIS, for me personally, I'll believe that maybe there needs to be integration, because whilst I mentioned that my understanding is that USASA looks at or relates more to the telecommunications industry, and therefore when they address issues of universal access and universal service, it would just relate to how telecom should provide telephony. There needs to be in universal service and access in the broadcasting space as well to ensure that there's balance. One could argue that possibly there might be another agency that is required to look at postal related services, or another group might argue that we need to integrate all of them, because now the competence, there is no need to have three different government entities or agencies dealing with the same ICT environment, because we tend to struggle then to measure the impact of the programs that they are implementing, because each one has its own annual performance plan and targets, which might not necessarily say the same thing. The PFMA and how the MDDA is concerned, my understanding is that there are specific provisions that each would adhere to depending on which schedule that company is at. I don't necessarily see any conflict or non-compliance issues, because typically as someone who works for government, Department of Communications to be specific, for over 10 years, when you get employed in the public service, you are inducted. There are mandatory PSMA courses as well as corporate governance programs that we have to undertake in order to understand how the government machinery works, issues around accountability, how you're supposed to be spending the funding and account for them. Currently, even though we understand the enormity of the challenges that face the country in terms of telecommunications or ICT broadband connectivity, sometimes it is a mouth task for government to believe that individually as sector departments would be able to handle everything that has to do with telecommunications and to address the gap between the heads and the heads-ons, which would assume, which would suggest that the MTA, even though it gets granted funds or allocated funds by government and is also funded by the private sector, there's a need for it to partner with other agencies to ensure that it enhances the little that it gets from the state and the companies that pay levies or whatever poor terminology one might attach to the contribution that the broadcasters are paying to the MTA. I'm of the view that the fact that ICT is a national competence, we don't have MCs for ICT in provinces, might be considered to serve on the board, would ensure that the programs that we implement at provincial level and the kind of facilitative work that we do to ensure that in the sphere of local government have a contribution in as far as ensuring that the ICT programs that are implemented by DOC, by GCIS, via the MDDA as well as the SASA take root. There's nothing more painful than seeing a national department going to implement programs that are not integrated towards a province or a local municipality or district for that matter, because those programs tend to fail. I'm from a provincial investment promotion agency. I report to provincial government. We have plans that due to ICT, having a rep within the MTDA board, I believe would play a complementary role, and it would be beneficial to both the MTDA and, I would say, the Eastern Cape broadly. I understand that we're not talking provinces. This is a national program, but it is difficult not to be specific about where I'm coming from, because first and foremost, I would need to add value where I'm coming from and ensure that other provinces that are tier two provinces, in this instance, Eastern Cape tends to be compared, equated to Limpopo and Mpumalanga, whilst the tier one provinces tend to be Gauteng, the Western Cape, and KZN. Therefore, I believe there is the various issues that I would bring if considered on the board. I also believe that, I'm not sure if I understood the first question that spoke about regulation. My understanding is that I've worked in a policy environment. Before the regulation and legislation, there's a policy picture that is being set. It is the DOC first and foremost who facilitates the passing of policies, which then are implemented by agencies and interpreted by companies like CASA, or translated into regulation and related directives, if I were to put it like that. So my view is that if you have the policy foundation, you have what it takes to understand what happens within operations as well as in the area of regulation. I'm hoping that I covered all the questions.
Thank you.
Well, I'll cover your questions. Oh, maybe the witnesses, I'm sorry, ma'am.
No, it's fine. You'll come back, but let her have the problem to indicate.
No, Chairperson, you know, I don't want to... I think it's not all the same. I wasn't quite clear why I spoke about broadcasting and regulatory sector. I was saying I think you are the relevant person maybe who can explain in terms of the role that the MTTA is supposed to play. And having said so, maybe it would be much clearer if I say to Ms. Nichols, then she maybe elaborate on what she understands about the media development diversity agency, what its role is. That's where my broadcasting and the regulator thing I picked up because I thought it might be relevant to that. Maybe if she elaborates, now she'll understand why I'm asking about
it. Thank you. You can respond to that, including the last one she wanted to respond to. Thanks,
sir. My understanding is that even though we talk convergence, we talk migration, we talk the difficulty of separating what was traditionally known as broadcasting or telecommunications. The reality is that because those services are not provided for equally throughout South Africa, there will forever be a need for someone to advocate for new papers to be there. The argument that because the technologies, the ICT, we need to move paperless offices. Sometimes it sounds beautiful, but when we are down in an area where you can't receive your telecommunications services that would enable you to have a paperless office, you tend to appreciate the value that each of the three serves in the broader community. My understanding is that the broadcasting sector has 3 tiers. Your community, your commercial, and your public. The SABC, for example, would fall, whether one would say it traditionally, under the public sphere. It is funded in a particular way, it has a particular mandate. Your commercial is really your big.
Let me help you on the question by the member, if I understood very well. What the member is taking you to is taking you direct to the MDDAF. The question is, directed into that, whether you understand in relation to the exclusive service MDA, what is the role of MDA. So it's a specific question which relates to in problem terms of the MDA at the establishment of MDA as an agent to do certain things which you must put from the court.
Thank you. My understanding is that the MDA Act of which was passed in 2002, actually, is an act that to ensure that while the TCIS has a mandate to promote, to profile, to share government messages and communication about the programs that government is doing, then there would be an agency that would ensure that they implement some of the programs that are aimed at informing people at a more community level about the programs of government. In my understanding, the MDA Act set the MDA to look at promoting, it is difficult to say that in broadcasting and commercial, because the fact that they also do research and lobbying and make submission to influence some of the issues that are implemented by center as an example, suggest to me that even though the MDDA is there to ensure that there's diversity in terms of media, is to ensure that languages are catered for, because if the CCIS is the base of government, then it becomes the MDDA's responsibility to say all the programs that government passes through and are implemented or overseen by the CCIS reach the grassroots communities.
No, madam. Let me help you. There is a clear separation between CCIS and MDDA. They are not intertwined. And MDDA does not implement CCIS programs. So these are two different entities. The CCIS is government communication, which belongs under the minister in the president of monitoring and evaluation. And MDDA belongs to the same minister, but there are two distinct institutions with clear different roles as well. So when you respond, don't conflate the two. they are living separate entities with the other people who are here for MBA. We can't ask you about the GIS, but if we want to ask for both, we can ask you a better question about the GIS because the MBA. Honorable Ruto, that's all you come in from.
Maybe your explanation is quite valid, but you see, the response that I'm getting now is precisely why I asked the question. Because a lot of people conflate the two. So that is the reason why I needed an explanation of what is the mandate of the MBDA and the mandate of the GIS shouldn't be seen as a overlapping. Now the chairperson has already explained where the two differ. That's why I was asking the question, because I know there are people who are thinking the same way you are thinking. Now that's why I was asking you to give me the mandate of the MGTA emanating from the Act.
Thank you. Do you understand the question? It's all about MCTA mandate in terms of the MCTA.
I'm hoping that I'll answer it in two sentences so that I don't seem to be confusing the two, because I'm hoping that is not my intention. The MCTA Act provides for the MCTA to ensure that there's diversity in the space of media. A number of people are provided a platform to add their views, to receive in information through various forms of media platforms, particularly your community and your small commercial operations. They focus on offering grant funding to ensure that small commercial print and community operations do flourish and they take shape within the community sphere of broadcasting. Can I leave it at that?
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair and Honorable Chair, and afternoon, Ms. Ndana. My question will be, having listened to the response from the Honorable Member, she has asked me, I assume if I had it correctly that you currently are waiting for government, do you think you would have time and undivided attention also to serve on the board, or what would happen on that? That's one I do understand. Even myself, I come from Eastern Cape, I appreciate that. You believe that Eastern Cape will benefit from you being at level in terms of the MBA board, MBA board. I just want to check that one. Two, check. Having recently our responses also, your appreciation of MBA in terms of which also all of us who are here for about that, for the clean audit report. Do you believe that there's a balance between dealing with the financials in a good way in terms of a PMA, good corporate governance, in terms of a Q3 code and so forth and so forth, as I said earlier, that is there any imbalances in terms of the core mandate in terms of ensuring that in particular the local media does also get a space in terms of sustainable or sustainable, it needs to say sustainable. It could be, I'm not speaking in terms of print or electronic media, I'm just saying media in general as a whole. Noting that the ICT within global work is moving very fast, and also the previous disadvantaged areas, they might not, in terms of economic sharing, might not catch up with that in terms of accessing that information and so forth. That's two. Three, Chair. In your own view, do you think it's advisable for board members to be actively involved within the industry? If no, why? And also, if we get, could it please also assist us in terms of giving support in terms of all those two responses if you were going to do that? Totally, Chair. Do you believe, notwithstanding that you are working for government, but as an ordinary person, that the MBDA is well known in terms of the organizations and individuals that supposed to take advantage and utilize MBDA in terms of transformation? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. May I respond?
Thanks, Chair. I'm going to request that you refer for me. I don't think that I caught number two, so I'll focus on 1, 3, and 4. The first one being, do I believe I have the time to serve on the board? I believe so. More so, that because the MTDA is in operational, I'll start by saying since 2004, because they articulate that they are first budgetary benefited since that year. I believe that they've reached a state of maturity where their system appears to be running smoothly. I don't know if there's something that is going with, that can be called run smoothly in a corporate environment, but at a face value they are there. So they have a predetermined schedule of their meetings. And my understanding is that then one would be able to balance, because you know I have time that these are board meetings in a particular financial year, so we are able to slot them out. I believe I'm able to balance as well, because as someone who works within the environment I work in, it is also our responsibility to enter into partnerships with sister agencies to ensure that we complement each other, which means this will not be a personal responsibility. It would be something that is officially declared, such that when there's a need to get board meeting, there's a relationship, because there are grantees that are in the Eastern Cape as an example, which means directly the MDDA is contributing to the economy of the Eastern Cape. So I believe it could be well received, because it could be properly planned for ahead of time. Number three was asking a personal view about whether it is advisable for people to be within the sector. I believe it's a yes and no answer. Individuals, in my view, are very complex people, and each one has its own code of conduct. When you operate a private business, as an example, you know the scorecard, and that you observe when you're wearing that cap of being a business person. When you're within a board environment, there are corporate governance procedures, principles, and code of conduct that you have to adhere to. There are issues around the conflict of interest that you go there knowing that you should not conflict. I believe people are able to wear different caps depending on what it is they want to achieve. So it could act as a good thing. It could also be an advantage, because at times people might want to question the credibility of a person, to say you might pass a particular, or you might vote in favor of a particular position while in a board, only to find out that you are trying to make the environment good for yourself personally outside the confines of the board. But I believe there's a balancing act that is able to take root, especially because the decisions that are taken in that environment are not one-member decisions. There's a voting and some deliberation that happens before a particular decision is taken. Whilst you might lobby for a particular point, there are other people as well that counterbalance. In terms of whether the MTDA is well known by the beneficiaries, it's a bit tricky, because coming from the environment I come from, ICT generally tends not to be viewed as a priority sector. You might be in a particular community, they don't know who the MDDA is, they don't know who DUC is, in spite of the fact that DUC is championing the ICT sector, which means generally my observation is that people tend to struggle with understanding the operators in the space, which could, by implication, mean they might not know about the MDDA because they don't know about the ICT sector broadly. I believe the fact that the MDDA supports so many community radio stations and their programs are implemented in a sense, and the community radio stations tend to have a very close working relationship with the NGOs and the local sphere of government. In my view, somehow they also carry indirectly that responsibility of making the MDDA brand visible. I don't know if it's something that is done consciously or it is an unintended consequence that might assist the MDDA to get visibility. I believe there's room for improvement in terms of putting the brand out there. Probably if they were to have, e.g., consider having a satellite in one region to test if there would be any changes in terms of the services that they offer, that could be something worth trying. But at a personal level, I think they are visible. I'm not sure if people are taking advantage as much as they could of the services that are available across. I couldn't get your second question.
Honorable Thomas, you can repeat the question.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. If you can also, in your report to my last question, like what it needs to be done, then to come back to the second question. I'm asking this question with an appreciation that you understand very well the MDDA mandate. That if so, do you believe that there's a less attention problem, just to rephrase the question, lesser attention or support that's given to the local media individuals in the bodies without separating whether it's electronical or print media? Noting that when they are responding to the questions Honorable Member Rutuwa asked, you also made note of the previously excluded communities, like your Eastern Cape and then your Mpumalanga and Limpopo and so forth. If they are responding in that respect, let's say if you say yes, there is a lesser attention and support that is given, what do you think needs to be done in terms of ensuring the sustainability of the industry? Thank you.
You may answer.
My assessment is guided by what is published officially, both by the MDDA in terms of their annual report, what I view from their website as well. When I look at their report, to me, they would seem to have a fair spread of support that they offer throughout the provinces, particularly your marginalized areas. It could be... I don't know if it is sufficient or it is not sufficient. I know that there is a cry within that sector to say there isn't enough support that is offered, not just by the MDDA, but by the system, both public and government, across the spectrum, that they struggle to grow because they are competing with the big operators and your commercial ones. They don't necessarily get any set aside. If, as an example, they are paying rates with Centec, it's the same, there's no separation. And when one views it to that angle, one might say not enough attention is given. But the MDDA in particular, in my view, I believe they do pay a fair amount of attention, especially when one considers that the USASA does not pay in that space. So my assessment is that they do, I'm sure there is room for improvement, not just in terms of channeling more programs to the sector, maybe to also assist them to formalize them and also to make use of other national incentives that are there that might be addressing some of the areas where the MDDA is falling short on. Thank you.
Thank you. I think it was the Honorable Chief. If not, if I'm the correct one, we'll follow after Honorable Chief.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, Sintana. My name is Marion Shum. I would like to know what it is about the community media environment, broadcasters and print media, that interests you enough to want to invest time in it, to get involved in perhaps promoting its interests. Because as you had any kind of contact with that sector, as far as I can see. We've also had, obviously, during the day, various people, other candidates, discussing the sustainability of many of the newspapers and broadcasters. And we had one that said they really were not sustainable because there was too much other, you know, competition from the mainstream media, printing costs are too high, that, you know, they could never pay their own way. Do you have any ideas on what could perhaps be changed to the NDDA's model for promoting community media that they could make it sustainable? And if so, what would those be? And then do you believe that that government sort of giving seed funding to start up businesses without any kind of some set clause is a good way to go? Do you believe that we should actually be almost sort of handing out grants to young businesses to get going? Thank you.
When you respond, I assume that you understand what the concept is.
Yes. I have not studied the business model for sustainability, particularly in print. What puzzles me, and generally the fact that some of the print publications are distributed free of charge. I never ask myself, this publication, you get it each week, it's a free copy. I don't understand how they generate revenue. That is not something I've paid attention to, but it's been a question mark in my mind to say, I don't know how they do it. In the case of an example, you hear people talking about printing costs being high, the fact that sometimes they have to go to KZN to print their newspaper, but they continue to do so. The sustainability, the business model, the pressure points, I don't know them. I've not seen as well any research paper that the MDDA might have published, or any entity for that matter, that might give me clarity in terms of that. In terms of community radio or even community television, my view is that because one gets a license from ICASA, I commend the position from the MDDA's point of view that per province they intend to support one community television station because it is too costly to run and sustain an effective one, especially one that would command viewership. If you invest in that space, you need to know that the kind of local content that you are bringing would be compelling enough to make a person tune off or switch off from SABC to watch this broadcaster. In my personal opinion, the talent is not necessarily made by indirectly by the MDDA. We tend to be copycats. You look at Gauteng with a huge economy that is driving South Africa and Africa for that matter. We will copy that they have more than one community television station. We don't consider the fact that the dynamics of the economic makeup might allow them to carry two. Also in a rural province like the Eastern Cape, we want to duplicate that. Of course it's going to fail. If 60% of the Eastern Cape is rural, that challenge in terms of connectivity, there is no way that we can blindly want to have many television stations. My view is that if the community radio sector tend to be able to sustain itself, whether that model is correct or not, I don't believe so. I don't think we pay enough attention in shifting their mindset such that they are not just targeting provincial government to buy space so that they can be sustainable and also to get a grant because there's someone who's offering that. My view is that we need to upskill the community radio people. Yes, every industry that is starting out require some form of government support. I don't believe it in manufacturing and farming in the state agriculture, so to speak, to call the private sector invested. Government put some form of seed capital to ensure that those sectors are sustainable. With so many sectors, as an example, that are there, which are lying vacant because the government was trying to ensure that manufacturing is sustainable in the state. Was that is that right or wrong? I wouldn't know. Government always has the responsibility of ensuring that there are jobs that are created. Yes, sometimes there are decisions that could be that maybe in the short term might be okay, like it should give one grant, but long term that are not sustainable. So we might do if we were to upskill radio people so that they understand the converting economy. Instead of setting a new television station operation as an example, to whether you can't use that network of community radios in a province or community because they already understand the idea of collecting content. It might be audio. Now they just need upskilling to be able to take the video element. To me, those are the innovative ways that I think we could use to ensure that there's sustainability. Understand our own unique dynamics and don't copy for a different economy. I'm collapsing both because maybe the issue around the standard clause, if it's in there, yes, there's a particular issue around the fact that I don't believe that there was one. Even the fact that one observed that there could be one station manager for over.
No, the question is, do you believe that there should not that there is? The member is talking about the continuous support by government. And the question is in relation to whether you believe that there should be a limitation in terms of how long we must government continue to support the community media. So that's where the sunset clause comes.
Thank you. I believe having the sunset clause assists to push any operation to end, because if you know initially that you'll get support for 3 years and that's it. I think you tend to pull up your stocks and to look at other avenues that you can leverage any kind of support that you can get. So yes, I'll support the idea of the sunset clause.
How do you approach, I'm sure you are from Eastern Cape, that there are areas in rural areas and in other provinces which whether you can sleep and dream will never be economic vibe. In that instance, how do you approach those if there is this issue of a sunset clause?
I think when you talk integration, it can work. There are areas that are rural where it does not make economic sense for providers to go, but still you can set a sunset clause as an agency. And also, let's take an example. There's a drive to say there might be in provinces areas that are declared as IDZ. However, when one does an assessment of how the economy is shaping up, it is realized that there's an area that needs to be a special economic zone, and usually the intervention where government would declare an area a special economic zone and then champion the seed capital to ensure that that economy thrives, invite the private sector as well to play their role. I don't believe setting the sunset clause would just mean it would be effective for government to just say we will give seed funding for 3 years and that's that. I tend to believe that there's a dialogue with your labor, as an example, with the private sector and government, then jointly it is agreed that we are declaring this area an SEZ, and we believe our government will intervene in a particular fashion while inviting the private sector to play its role. In that instance, I believe it does work. Also, communities are encouraged not only to look at government, to come up with their own solutions that speak to their environment. to apply for third party funding, even internationally. I know sometimes those commitments and contributions come with terms and conditions that might not be favorable to the area of concern, but I believe setting the causes work if they are not just done in isolation, and if the government is not the only pillar that is looked at to ensure that there's sustainability in that area.
Thank you. Honorable Shin, you're covered. Honorable Nivot Rochen.
Thank you, Chairperson. You were saying that we should go paperless or use less paper. Many companies, maybe now they're going to the website. Do you think that it may be a good idea, do you think it's a good idea to have community newspapers for them to go digital? But at the same time, take in consideration that if the community, more community have access to that. So if you sit on the board and in the future you want to go digital, how can you assist and board members to make sure that newspaper can go digital? And secondly, the NDDA, do you think do they assist in the culture of literacy? Do they assist? So that, for example, do they encourage people to read? If you say no, and if you're a board member, how can you then encourage this culture of reading literature?
Thank you. You may respond.
My view is that theoretically we believe paperless environment is the best one. But sometimes when those hardcore decisions are taken, the people who are trying to serve your customers might think differently. There are people who still want their newspapers, even if as an operation you try to say, let's do an e-publication of the same newspaper instead of printing it. Maybe let's avail it on a PIT or a two-song center for people to read. I'm still want to have the physical paper. But I guess with any change, there's a degree of resistance. But if it is a decision is taken that this is the way, we'll upgrade all the PITs, for example, we're not just taking away the content of the newspaper, it is there available, but in an electronic format. I would then suggest, since as well there are issues around renewable energy and the fact that we have to conserve the environment and try not to print as much, maybe to slowly ensure that we upgrade those public facilities might be one way around the area of literacy reading. I do, when I read the report, appreciate that there are programs that are there to encourage young kids, even programs for them to get newspapers, whether they are enough or effective in terms of encouraging people to read. I'm not sure. I made an interesting observation and thought it is something worth exploring. In exam time, I was assisting an 11-year-old. One of the subject matters says, it asked the question, who are the three most important females in government? The textbook says it is Frank Chinwala. It's 2012. She's the Speaker of the National Assembly. It's Naledi Pandor. She's the chairperson of the NCOP. It's Mamu Upiliso of the Gender Commission. It kind of took me by surprise to say, we explain to the kids that it happened then. You don't need to do that because you don't fail. To me, that was the guest that says, if there was a radio program for young kids, you might be able, in a creative way that is not contradicting what they are learning in terms of the curriculum, find a way of showing them that there's a different reality. 2012 now, there are so many other women in government that are there. But it is difficult for you to try to give them facts while the curriculum is saying something else. I believe the more that the community media sector could play, particularly them, because they reach the most of the rural communities in terms of ensuring that up-to-date content is there and kids are encouraged in a creative way to learn more about South Africa by being sensitive about the fact that when they're writing their exams, the three women would be the ones that are prescribing that textbook. So yes, there are programs that encourage reading. Also, with the arts and culture, I appreciated an example in our own province when the minister with the MDA together were in PE for a week to promote reading, literacy and culture earlier this year. It said to me, jointly, we could be able to see more if they consolidate their efforts in ensuring that reading is encouraged in the school.
Thank you, Honorable Schumann. Before Honorable Schumann, a follow-up.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I just want to make sure, are you talking about the PITs? The PITs are lying useless and are not being used. Just want to make sure, are you talking about the PITs? Because more than 10 years ago that's being used. Thank you.
PIT? Can you respond?
Yes, it's the public internet terminal. There are a couple that do work. Yes, the majority of them aren't working, as well as the Song Center, at least for the environment that I'm coming from. My recommendation was that if we were to consider to upgrade whatever software that is there to make them usable. I know also another area that assisted, at least in recent case, is the fact that the Office of the Premier would champion the idea of ensuring that the Tucson Centers and the PITs are functional where there are challenges. The ECPC is tasked to ensure that business, local businesses, SMEs for that matter, are the ones who should be encouraged to come up with newer versions of applications to make those strong centers and PITs sustainable. A majority of them are green, are not working.
Thank you. Honorable Schumann.
Thanks, Commissioner Chairperson. I just want to ask two questions, really, and the first one relates to, well, they both relate to the objectives of the agency, and I trust that you are familiar with the legislation and the act that governs the MDDA. I am Greg Schumann, and good afternoon. My apologies for that. The first one question I want to talk to relates to the objective of the MDDA, which is talks about the channeling of resources to community media and small commercial media sectors. And one of the things that's come up in the questions to you today has been the issue of sustainability. But I'd be interested to hear your views around to whether the MDDA is paying sufficient attention to the composition of boards or management committees of community radio stations and community newspapers. Do you think that there's sufficient emphasis placed on what sort of skills are required on these boards? And would this in any way go some way to helping these radio stations and newspapers to travel further along the path of sustainability? That's the first. And then the second question, of course, also deals with the objectives of the agency, as to whether you think that the MTA is doing sufficient work to promote literacy and a culture of reading. I'd just like to hear your views on that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You may respond.
Thanks, sir. My assessment in terms of the first question, the composition of the boards and whether they have the correct diagnosis is made, I have time to check if they have the right set of skills or not. I believe it is a challenge that comes because of the way the Act would put it. It is to say a community operation should be owned by a community and for a community. Some whites at one level, one would appreciate that. At another level, it poses a challenge because it does not speak to the issue of competence, of skill set necessarily. You just need to prove that the ownership is by the community, which means that particular community that might have applied for a license, no particular attention or not enough attention is paid to ensure that there's the right skill set. I believe there's something that I'm hoping now that ICASA is doing another round of consultation might have been cleared, because there were recommendations that were made around the issue of skilling, of the makeup, how those community radio stations are contributed to ensure that the right people with skills are put in place. That said, I believe there are a number of supporting agencies. Open Society Foundation is giving duty to a degree after one has been awarded a license. They do play a role in the Institute of Advanced Journalism in ensuring that there are ongoing skills training programs to capacitate the people that take leadership in those radio stations. Whether they are effective or not effective, I'm not sure about that. However, I believe now that we have the MICTC and the greater focus in ensuring that there are structured programs in the area of media, things might change a bit. The idea of whether the MDA is doing enough in terms of promoting the culture of reading, literacy, and related issues, I noted earlier that in the public reports, I pick up that there are programs that are there that encourage this culture. I'm not sure if they are sufficient. My observations are that over and above what I read in the MDDA published reports, there's been visible movement in the media that would make one suggest that there's something that they are doing. I don't know about the adequacy thereof. Maybe the area of channeling grants as well to those operations to a degree, I provided context to it to say for an industry to thrive, someone has to make the first move to assist it, to assist somehow so that it takes off. Whether that should be perpetual or not, it's a different one, because then sometimes by offering the grant all the time, there tends to be a dependency. You don't mature and understand that you need to look at other avenues, e.g. within the Eastern Cape, there are provincial development finance institutions that are willing to give low interest loans. I've never seen operators in the community space willing to take a loan, even if the interest is very low. Whether that is encouraged by the idea of grants, I don't know.
Honorable Cinnamon, I will cover main thing. Okay. Any other question, remember? Maybe one question from me. What is your understanding of media diversity?
My understanding is that for it to make sense, it has to address the issues of diversity in ownership, who owns the media, who funds them, because sometimes the person who funds has an influence, who is at management level. So my understanding of media diversity says we need to have media outlets that are diverse, different commerce, community, commercial, public, so that everyone can find expression, can express their views, so that people can see themselves on television, as an example, their views being represented. It also means that it should consider the issue of language, because there could be several media outlets, yet they don't speak your language. or you don't see your culture represented, so it does not seem like you are being catered for.
And how do you measure that?
I believe by looking broadly, the Department of Trade and Industry, or government through the Department of Industry, Trade and Industry as an example, is championing the idea of industrialization. People ensuring that when they, if you buy shares in a particular company, it is not just for branding. You are there, you understand that you need to make maximum input. And my view is that it is about and encouraging and talking some more to people to expose the opportunities that are there, because I believe that there are opportunities. It's just that the uptake, I don't know what that is a subject of. If you look at the Eastern Cape in particular, each time the DGI comes to the province, we are forever encouraged to take opportunity of government incentives that are there. It is an embarrassing zero to say that we are taking a group of LMMEs to a foreign country for trade to open market access for them. They are none from the Eastern Cape. The question is why would they just want a grant, not want to fill a form? It's a matter of saying we don't talk enough about those programs, or it's about the fact that we work in silos. If someone from the DGI comes to promote government incentives, we don't see the direct linkage. We are waiting for the MPDA to come, because the MPDA is the agency that are set up to speak to the community media. I believe more dialogue to encourage people to take ownership and to change industrialization, manufacturing and production, not just want to be consumers of products that are manufactured by other people. In this instance, the idea of knowing that by packaging your own culture, your own local content, and trading, that's a stream of money that you bring to yourself. Nigeria is doing it perfectly, and that is equatable to what the community media is about, packaging content and using that as a product and trading in that space.
I would love, if we have enough time to talk about the Nigerian environment in the South African one. In that space, but we don't have that much time. I hope some other time we can engage more around the two experiences. Members, any other questions before we conclude? That was the last question from the members. Let me say again, our apology to inconvenience you about the sleeping over, not like that. It was not the time. But thank you very much to avail yourself for the interview. In 30 seconds, anything you may like to say before we allow you to leave?
Just appreciative of the opportunity to be invited. Even the session that I spent in the afternoon, it was exciting to see it live. I'm hoping that through this opportunity, networks have been established. Even whether I make it to the board or I don't make it, the next time you come to the Eastern Cape for oversight, please pay us a visit. Go by our small operation. If that's it. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. All the best. Thank you very much. Members, that will conclude our last candidate for today. Honorable Chief.
Thank you, Chair. I would like just an opportunity for us to discuss the process going forward. Now that we've concluded these interviews, obviously we need to make our decision next week, but I would just like to explore an idea, if I may, Chair.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I realise that I've that we've interviewed the candidates today in two batches. One for a permanent, not a permanent, but a long-term tenure, and one for the remainder of someone else's tenure. Having seen them all together, I came to the conclusion that the best candidates were in the short tenure list. And in fact, I would admittedly choose anybody from the full-term list from today's interview. Now, I know this is an advertising thing, there's a procedural thing, there's all sorts of legal heartache and hassle, but is there any way in which you could possibly consider one of the one or maybe two of the people on the short-term list for the full-time, for the full-term post? You know, obviously we need to get various little forms signed and, you know, I don't know what permissions we'd need and whatever. But is it at all possible? I don't know if any of the other members think sort of like I do. I know Ms. Van der Merwe did, and she wasn't here for the last interview. If there is any way that that could possibly be considered.
Thank you. We can check with that with the necessary people link as well as the but within the separation we advise at least that. That's why we have to advertise for each people to so that we can the two steps and so on. Probably there are two problems to check with that. But I'm not sure what the view of other members.
Doctor?
You within the district? Yes, sir. Well, I agree that we should consult the legal. But in all our things, the bus is easy. No, we will members because originally we raised the concern ourselves about the town advertising, but we told that because it's a full term and the remainder, so we can't negotiate. So that's why we had to spend another 100 and something out to advertise and things for the second one because we were told that we can't use it. It should be separated. Okay. Duma?
Chair, but actually, I think I think that's the point I was going to raise as well. That's the reason why we did two adverts. The committee did two adverts. It was explained to us up front. The problem is, if you want to try and change it now, even if they say you can, it's a bit of a disadvantage, actually. Because, you know, people have applied for one particular advert and just state one thing and apply to another advert instead of another, unless the two adverts are exactly the same. But I think I'm sure the committee section and the legal people.
No member, so I'm advised that there is no need to bring it further, it won't happen. It's supposed to be separated. I'm not that's why the committee does it. That's why we wanted to avoid cost by that extending the first one. But they say no cut off, only one to be saved. Paul, that will conclude the business for today. We will meet next week, Tuesday, to finalize everything. But we hope that parties in the meantime will be just looking for the areas and so on, so that...